Teeny Beans and Blue Jeans. It's the Bob McCallum podcast for a Friday, end of the week. Not quite the end of the month. How many shopping days till Christmas, Shannon?
For you, 13.
13, thank you.
Yeah. For the rest of us, we're done.
And a reminder, of course, that 7-Eleven is open until 11 o'clock at least on Christmas Eve. So if you forget anybody.
Do not mention sponsors. If they're not paying, they're not getting on. Okay.
All right, your local convenience store will be open until just before midnight on Christmas Eve. So for all you guys, I know women would never do that, but you forget anybody like your wife, you know, pick up some beef jerky and she'll be happy. Well, or you'll be happy. Somebody will be happy. We haven't started an NHL season. We assume we're going to start an NHL season, but we don't know exactly when or how or how long it's going to last or how many games or I don't think we know anything, but we're going to chat about it here on this Friday roundtable. A couple of our pals, Scott Burnside of The Athletic from Atlanta, Georgia, and Brian Lawton of the NHL Network is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, Burnside, to you first. You're kind of on top of this on a regular basis. What's your best bet as to when this thing starts?
It's a great question, and I think you can start with the date that they've already pinpointed. And I think you can start with January 13th. And I think, you know, until, let's assume that the Board of Governors are going to agree with Gary Bettman and they're going to move forward, because really they have no other option in spite of the posturing that led up to this, and the players want to play. And now we know a target date. We know when they'd like to start training camp. We know what they'd like to get an extra few days for the unfortunate seven that didn't go to return to play in the summer. I think that can happen. I think the bigger question is what happens once you open the door? What happens when teams are practicing? What happens in localities or markets where the local health regulations forbid you from gathering and doing those kinds of things? And we know San Jose for sure is in a bit of limbo right now. Will their regulations change in time for starter training camp? My guess is they'll start both practicing and playing in Arizona. But what happens when you have two or three markets like that? I just think it's about being nimble, and I think the NHL has shown in the lead up to return to play that they are capable of being nimble and pivoting on a dime and making those changes. But I think there's a good chance we're going to see hockey starting January 13th. Maybe I'm glass half full, but I think it can happen.
Brian, as a former player, do you see any of this as being problematic? I mean, let's say it takes another 10 days for them to decide that the 13th of January is the start date. Now you're getting close to Christmas. You're probably only going to have 10 days, 2 weeks on the ice in advance. Problem? No problem.
By itself, it would be a problem. But when you look at the environment we're in and what the players are doing, Bob, they're clearly ready to go. Like, I believe these guys could start. Aside from the logistics, from a health standpoint, players have ramped it up. They're ready to play. They're ready to practice. They're ready to do what they got to do. And they're looking around at the environment in the United States right now. I'm in Minnesota. We're on our third wave of COVID here. And the headline this morning, thankfully, finally, was that it's starting to regress out here. I wait 5 minutes. I read the next story. I see that the Los Angeles Lakers are playing the LA Clippers tonight in an exhibition game. Players are aware of what's going on in their environment. They need a moment's notice to get started at this stage. I'm with Scotty. I think it's going to be a lot closer to the 13th, if not on the 13th, than people think. A lot of people have tried to put forth a little bit of a conspiracy theory, in my opinion, that Gary Bettman doesn't really want to start. He'd like to have less games, this, that, and the other thing. I don't think that's true. I think the NHL took a shot at maybe trying to rework some things. It didn't work out. And it's going to be business as the way it should be. They have a new agreement, and away we go.
I actually think, Brian, if Gary had his way, we would have started January 1st. We would have started with something January 1st. The real issue becomes is the concern on some of the owners, not a lot now, but some of the owners, of when they can actually open doors and put people in seats in order to get some of their local revenue back, which is why I think some of the owners were pushing for February 1st or even February 15th. But there's, you know, there's more than that handful that actually want to start playing, because there's too much at stake overall. I think there's a real importance, a real emphasis, because the NBA is playing, that they don't want to give away the rest of the winter and the spring to other sports. I think that the NHL brand, particularly in the United States, needs to stay in front of people's eyeballs. And I got a question. That's a huge factor.
I got a question maybe for you, John. I know anybody jump in and if you know the answer to this. So the difference between starting in mid-January and mid-February, and let's assume you lop off 10, 12 games off the schedule because you have to. I don't know whether you do, but let's just assume that. Where do sponsors fit in on that? Where do the television networks fit in on that economically? If Sportsnet or NBC has paid X millions for rights, are they still paying that same amount based on a 50-game schedule rather than an 82-game schedule?
Well, first of all, the max schedule right now is going to be 56. And I think that if we started any later or started in February, it would drop to 48.
Well, what's the economic impact of fewer games, John?
Well, the key thing in all of this is, Bob, that the playoffs would remain the playoffs, and the playoffs would remain complete. So the economics of it is that the NHL would try to deliver as many national windows as possible. It's not games, but windows. You know, in Canada, the national nights are Wednesdays, Saturdays, Sundays. So if you deliver them one game, that's the national window. And so that would still be possible. So it would be prorated. The question is, and you know, we all know that the NHL office is well prepared. They've got people crunching numbers all the time, whether it be schedules, whether it be sponsorship issues, of what the percentage of their revenue would be compromised in a prorated season.
But isn't the whole point, John, whatever the prorated is for 2021, and really what we're talking about is a 21 season, mm-hmm. That at the end of it, you renegotiate the new deal because the deal's coming to a close. And whether that's certainly nationally in the United States, the local television deals that may come up, whatever you have to prorate, you need to get a season in so that in the off season, after the Stanley Cup is awarded in early July, now you go back to the table and you're negotiating a full new national deal in the United States. And whether that means ESPN comes to the table, whether it changes your streaming rights and all those kinds of things. I mean, that's the pivotal part, right? That's why you can't just go dark and pick it up in September.
Well, certainly you can't go dark, Scott. I mean, because if you do that, you're going to have to roll over this current season.
Right.
And your timing, I would suggest that they're going to have, I would suspect that if the season starts, as you guys think in January, I suspect that we might start hearing about a new national deal in the United States probably by the end of that regular season before the playoffs start.
Right.
That is the $64 million question though, guys, really, what is that trigger that constitutes a season this right. year? I'm not privy to that. I have some ideas, but John, you know more than anybody. But ultimately, yes, that is certainly a massive consideration when the BOG meets. That's one of the number one questions owners want answered specifically.
Well, and this is where, and you talked about it, Brian, in believing in Gary. This is Gary's strength. This is where Gary has been able to make sure that he's got a unified group. When it comes to national television deals in both countries, he has done a solid job over the years. Every time, from the first time he got hired in December of 1992, he has promised certain things and they have come to fruition, particularly national television deals in both countries.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's got a challenging situation though, John, and you touched on it earlier as Bob did. in terms of what is the right number of games. It's not equally as good for every franchise because of, again, in your wheelhouse, what the regional deals are. They're not equal across the National Hockey League. There's a massive disparity there. So playing these games and everything, that's probably been the biggest challenge for the NHL. How do we round up 31 different interests and get them aligned? And the answer is exactly what we're seeing. You got to play the long game on this. You can't think short term. So I'm very, very, just pleased that that looks like it's going to be the solution. And it's the right solution. The NHL does need to play. They can't go dark. It's going to be challenging for some owners. I've spoken to some of them recently. They've made it abundantly clear to me that it is. That's just the way it is, unfortunately. But those are the challenges that Gary Bettman and the rest of his staff face on a daily basis, trying to appease everyone.
One of the issues that seems to be a stumbling block, and jump in, guys, if you know anything about it, is the negotiation over the escrow, the amount of money that's going to be set aside, and the terms under which, I guess, salaries for this year will be repaid somewhere down the road. Is that still on the table? Does anybody know? Or has that been solved?
But, I mean, I think it seems very clear, unless they pivot again, that they've agreed to put that aside, that they're going to abide by the MOU from 5 months ago, the deal that was struck to get return to play back on track, and so we could see playoffs. And, you know, it's not an issue that's going away, right? I mean, does this mean we see a flat cap for 5 or 6 years instead of 2 or 3 years? I mean, again, those are things, again, Brian talks the long game. No one knows what the long game is going to be, how quickly both Canada and the United States can recover from the coronavirus, how quickly the vaccine will be made available, how quickly people go back to buildings. Will they go back at all when they have the vaccine available to them? These are all unknown things. But I think that, you know, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think basically the league tried to use this to leverage a little bit more out of the players. And I think it was more about an immediate cash infusion. So more deferral short term, which would ultimately have been paid back to the players. Mm-hmm. Players, well, they balked and then they asked for give backs from the league. And the league said, no, we'll accept what we have agreed to and we will deal with this down the road. And that's, it, to do it otherwise was to court disaster in terms of getting a season in play at all, and then certainly delay it, as we talked about, into a part of the calendar where maybe it jeopardizes your television deals even further. So I don't think we're going to hear much more about it in the short term, but maybe that's because I just hope we don't.
Unsolicited, the answer to that, Scott, really, and we're talking about it already, is what does the future deal look like for the National Hockey League? If that deal is 2, 3, 4 times more than it currently is, then all this mumbo jumbo cold fusion about escrow is a non-issue. If right. It isn't, then it's more problematic. Yeah. I think what the NHL was trying to do, and I talk to Gary fairly regularly, but this is not from him, this is just my conjecture, was just hedging their bets. Yeah. Giving themselves a little bit more room. The last thing you want to do is finish this deal and find out that the players still owe $600 million in dollars. Yeah. That would not be a great spot to start the next deal from, having the players owe that. And I don't mean it wouldn't be a great spot for the players. I don't think it's a great spot for ownership, personally.
Yeah.
One of the things,
you know, what happens with that. That gets rolled forward.
Yeah. One of the things that we've seen, you know, we must remember that when the National Hockey League came back after the pandemic began, there was nobody in the stands. The only other sport that was active right away was the NBA, and then baseball came along, but nobody played in front of fans. Since September has rolled around, things have started to change. We've seen NFL games with some people in the stands. Well, we saw the World Series with some people in the stands. We've seen college football with some people in the stands. So
Everywhere outdoors, Bob.
I got you. And what I hear here, and I've been hearing it for quite some time, is the owner's desire to give themselves enough wiggle room to be able to project having people in the arenas at some point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a vaccine coming, but we're starting to get understand that the distribution of that vaccine is going to take an awful long period of time. And the process of testing people or establishing whether people have had the vaccine before they go into the arena, and I don't even know if that's being discussed, is ominous to say the least. Is this even worthwhile contemplating putting people inside arenas over the next 4, 5, 6 months, however long the season takes? Brian, to you first. What do you think?
Absolutely. We will have fans in the arenas this year in the National Hockey League. I have no doubt about it. Right now, there's still a lot of trepidation because, like you're saying, people aren't certain how the vaccines are going to roll out. The number one story on the paper, on the television this morning, was the workmanship between UPS and FedEx and how they're going to distribute these vaccines throughout the United States. It was really an incredibly powerful story. So there's a lot going into it. You've got a team like the Warriors on the West Coast that are putting a tremendous amount of their own money in basketball to figure out how to get people safely back in their stadiums. It absolutely will happen, but nobody knows how much. I think you could see as much as 50, 75% of fans back in NHL buildings before this season is over.
So, yeah, I think that the timing, Brian, is more key than the fact that people show up. Will public health authorities allow people to show up in late February? Will it be late March? Will it be for the playoffs? That's the real question. And when you deal, I mean, let's face it, professional sports and the NHL are so used to living in their own world where they decide the rules. But when you put a worldwide pandemic on the plate, now you've got outside influences. And you've got outside influences that are, in truth, more powerful than the league. And you have to sit and wait and see. What if there aren't enough people that take the vaccine? What if distribution falls short? Those are issues that, and then we end up with a spike in March. I mean, there could be another spike. We don't know. We hope there isn't. We hope there wasn't a spike at Thanksgiving in the United States, but there's going to be. You know, so there are just too many variables that are out of everyone's control on this call and at the Board of Governors call and on the Players Association call to make sure that we can have people at some percentage in any building.
Yeah, well, and I mean, short term, that's what we're talking about, right? And we're not talking about, right. You know, I mean, even so, I don't know what the rules are per se in Dallas, but it's possible the Stars could start the season with a small number of fans in the American Airlines Center, because that's what local regulations will allow, social distancing. And if
they had people in the building watching the big screen in the final, Scott.
Exactly. Right. So that happened. What happens in New York or in Pennsylvania, that's a non-starter right now. And then to me, I think the bigger issue is not, do we have fans at some point in this season? Maybe we do, maybe we don't, maybe it's during the playoffs. I mean, obviously, it's better for the owners if we can do it safely, and that happens. But the question is going to be, which markets are allowed to play, which markets during the season have to stop playing and may have to go somewhere else. I mean, we talked a little bit about San Jose. What if the three California teams are shut down by the state government there, right, or their specific local health regulations? You can't do more than two NHL teams in one marketplace. That's my sense of it. And the NHL wants NHL teams in NHL markets. So you will see some doubling up, but that may happen three or four times during the course of this truncated schedule. And that's going to be the interesting part the mechanics of that and how you work it, and then how you respond when the inevitable happens, where you do have players or personnel who test positive with NHL teams and games have to be postponed. Because that seems, I think everyone I've talked to at the league is like, hey, we, you know, hope it doesn't happen, mm-hmm. but the expectation is it will.
It should be noted, a little bit of a discussion last night, is that the NHL is planning, when it's available, to do a private purchase of vaccine for its players. The timeline is still to be determined, because we know the vaccines are going to the frontliners first. We know it's going to old age homes, seniors first, people more that have less immunity to the pandemic, to COVID. But there are companies that are going to produce the vaccine for private sale. And like a lot of big companies, the NHL is going to be out there trying to purchase it at an appropriate time in order to try to make sure that's players by the end of the season. I don't know. In the summertime, I don't know. We don't know the timeline. But when it's available, they're certainly planning on trying to purchase the vaccine for the players.
Well, that's great. And I mean, the rich get richer. I mean, that's the inevitability of the reality of life. And we've all, I think, taken a look at our phone records to see if we know any prominent politicians or doctors so that we can get as high on the list as possible. We're all kind of in the same boat. So does it surprise me that the rich cats of the National Hockey League want to protect their players and their infrastructure? No, of course not. And so will major corporations outside of the realm of sport. But the issue here
airlines too.
Sure. But the issue still here, guys, is an economic one. And okay, your players are safe, but you still can't put people in the seats because they aren't. They haven't got the protection. We are now seeing something in the neighborhood of 10% of the capacity of outdoor stadia being used. So let's just say something happens and the NHL gets to the point, the first step is, okay, you can put 10% in each arena. It's 2,000 people, 1,800 people. What is the real economic impact to each of these teams of that? And I would say negligible. So why might they be spending all this time worrying about it? Don't know me, John. It's one-tenth. It's one-tenth of the revenue that they would get. And the cost of operations now are significantly higher than they would be under a normal scenario, under a normal season. So it's money. We all like money. We all know these owners love money. They have plenty of it, or they wouldn't have bought an NHL team. But they're not going to be made whole at 10%. Are they?
No, they're not. We know they're not.
So, we're fighting over scraps here, aren't we, Lawton? You know, give me your 2 cents on this.
Well, you've already heard some teams, some of the more, I don't know if we'll say forward-thinking, aggressive, whatever you want to use. You've already heard them say, we'd love to play outdoors. Why? Because if we get 10% of a $60,000, 60,000-seat stadium, it's not terrible. And outdoors, you might get 20, certainly pretty soon here. So it won't be negligible. It's something. It's psychological as much as anything, though, Bob, because everything you guys were saying is true. I happen to believe we will have fans and a lot more than people think. I don't know. You happen to believe not even worth it, won't change anything. You don't know. That is the challenge for Gary Bettman and his staff every day. Trying to hit a moving target. The goalposts are all over the place. It's hard to make a field goal.
Yeah, so, I agree. I'm not arguing with you, Brian, at all. I mean, I don't know the answers to any of these questions.
Well, this is the first time I've been on a show with you that you're not arguing with me.
Hey, no, but all right, would you like me to start? Because I'm happy to.
No, I'm enjoying it. Let's keep it.
It's 2 weeks before Christmas. I'm just trying to be nice.
But right now, we're talking about a schedule, a system that says teams are supposed to play in their own arenas. That may change.
Yeah.
you know, we don't, I mean, that's the way they're leaning. That's the way they're looking. That's the way the owners were told on their call the other day.
Yeah.
But, you know, if things take a turn for the worst in January, perhaps we're talking about the bubble system again, you know, a limited bubble system.
Sure.
We don't know.
I mean, Bob, I mean, I don't, you know, whether some teams have a few fans, many teams have no fans, whatever it is, I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other. Can you play the games? Can they get on television? I mean, part of the reason that they've grouped the teams geographically, and I see this morning now some debate, does Minnesota go west into that Pacific division, for want of a better term, and St. Louis goes into the centralized group? The reason they do that is they're trying to shave costs wherever they can, right? So if you can,
I get it.
So I get it. They're going to try to save money wherever they can. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you just have to accept that because of the dire circumstances that things are going to look and feel differently. And if somebody tries to wedge in 5,000 people into the American Airlines Center, and they can do it safely, and it's not, no one's going to bust regulations to do any of this stuff, right? I mean, the health regulations and the COVID-19 virus itself will dictate every single thing that happens with this schedule, everything.
I agree.
Within reason, Scott. I just came back from Texas. There's no COVID in Texas.
Well, I'm in Minnesota.
It's just anywhere.
Ask them. Yeah, just ask them.
I'm not saying it's right in Texas or in Florida, where how they have done things. Yeah, you're right. And one of the many great dilemmas for the NHL is that every market has its own specific issues as it relates to COVID. But COVID is going to dictate all of it. And it will dictate it in some levels in Texas, and it will dictate it in some levels in Florida. And it will be different if it's dictated in New York and Pennsylvania, and certainly in Canada, but that is how it's going to work. And it doesn't matter what the owners want or any of those things, they will take a knee because COVID will dictate the ultimate terms of this engagement.
Yeah, I mean, remember Bob, and we've had Eugene Melnyk on, he said he could break even around 6,000 people in his arena. That's what he said.
How come he doesn't make money when he has 12 or 15,000 in the arena? Is what I'd like to know. He can break even at 6, but can't at 15. Curious.
I guess he'd like to come closer at 6,000. And then early on we had Gary on say, listen, how many times did the plan change last time? To the original return to play. I mean, we were gonna have games in North Dakota, New Hampshire, and Notre Dame at one point. Then we ended up in Vegas and Vancouver, and we ended up in Toronto and Edmonton. I mean, that's how nimble and fluid the whole COVID situation forces you to be flexible.
They did make a good decision though in the end, guys. Oh, having it in Toronto and Edmonton was a great decision.
I would, you know, if you could do it with all 30, what are the 31 this week?
Yeah, 31.
31, if you could do it with all 31 teams, Lawton, I would say, okay, well, why don't you do that again? This whole idea that you got to play in your own arenas at the beginning of the season, that you have to travel, you have to do this, that, and the other thing. Does that make sense to you?
Players aren't going to go for it, Scotty. You know that for all your conversations.
I know they want to. But one of the things that was proposed, and we talked about it here, and you guys have both heard this, is the notion of in and out of the bubble. You go into the bubble for 2 weeks, you play 8 games. You come out of the bubble for 2 weeks, you don't play any. Go home, see the family, you know, have some potato chips, put your feet up, rest on the couch, go for the odd skate. Then you go back into the bubble. There's stuff you can do that mitigates all that. And yeah, I mean, we had, how many positive tests did you have in the bubble last year? Zero, right?
Let me think about that.
What do you think the chances are of repeating that if you're traveling? I know what the answer is. It's the same as the number of people who tested positive in the bubble, and that is 0% chance. guys are going to get it, right? And then you're going to sit there and say, oh, so you didn't want to go into a bubble again. You want to play hockey, but you don't want to go into a bubble. No, so now you got COVID. Have a nice time.
Well, I mean, so what you're talking, you know, Bob, if you're talking about the, you have two alternatives, have the bubble or don't have hockey. Neither are tenable solutions because the players don't want it and it's too expensive. And so you have to do the best that you can. And we saw Major League Baseball after not having their ducks in a row to start the season and having a number of embarrassing missteps, had some protocols in place that allowed them to travel in, play a bunch of games in the city, and then leave with relative success, right? And it wasn't foolproof. And no one expects this to be foolproof either. But I think this plan has merit because it can work if people behave properly. And it suits the needs of the players and the owners as best as possible. So, like, no one's talking about setting up a system that is foolproof or perfect. That's just, this is, I think, the best case plan moving forward. And people will get sick at some point, probably. You hope it's not too many. You hope you don't have a team that can't play for a month. I mean, we saw Major League Soccer that it fell to pieces in some markets. Well, you know, I think the NHL has done a pretty good job of putting protocols in place, and teams have done a pretty good job of following it. Players want to play. They want to stay healthy. I don't know whether it works or not, but I, you know, it's not an A or B thing, I don't think.
No, but they put Burnside, they put protocols in place for two locations, and teams, how many were there? 20 at the beginning, something
24.
Like that?
24, but they had okay. protocols at home too. They had the phase two was in every one of those 24 markets. And again, you started with players who, you know, were on their own and doing things. And by the time they got to Toronto and Edmonton, they all were testing negative. And that's because they were able to follow the protocols in their individual markets.
Yeah, but you cannot expect any kind of normalcy of travel to result in zero positive tests. I mean, look at the National Football League. You've got, like, every single day, this team has two, this team has three, bum, 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 bum. And I'm not being argumentative here. I'm not saying that that's necessarily the end of the world. I'm just saying you better get ready for this. And if you're going to jump through hoops just to have a season, and I know all the economic reasons why you should, you better not overlook the fact that this is going to be different. This is going to be different than what you went through when everybody was in a bubble. And from an economic standpoint, you know, okay, it costs money to put guys in hotels. It costs money to bring food in for them, blah, blah. They don't want to be there because they want their freedom to go home. Sure, in a normal environment, I get all that. This is not a normal environment. I'm staying at home. John's staying at home. I don't know about you, Burnside. You're at home now.
At home now.
Brian apparently is traveling all over the world and risking his life and limb. I hope you had to go to Texas, Lawton. Did you have to go?
I actually was there briefly on my way to Cabo, but yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well,
you got to do what you got to do, right?
The interesting part of this is that we have seen in years past, even all the way back to when Brian was in the league, different versions of the flu going through teams. You know, yeah. And remember the year that St. Louis had 9 regulars out of the lineup at one point, but that was at a time when people were doing their regular life thing. And dressing rooms and locker rooms weren't being cleaned at the same level as they are now. There's a new understanding. I mean, the NBA has gone through this, and the rules and regulations they put in for their players as of now in training camps are very stringent. And the same thing will occur for the NHL. When you're at home, you go from your house, you go to the rink, you're going to test. You will then be told whether you can go on the ice or not. And then you go home and you stay home and don't do anything. You can't go to the grocery store.
That's lovely theory, John. Lovely theory. And I understand they're going to do the best they can.
I know it's a theory. But baseball,
the best they can.
Bob, baseball went through this. And as Scotty talked about, that first 6 weeks was hell for Major League Baseball. And then the players started to realize, boy, if we do play, we better start paying attention to the rules. And I think the NHL players understand the rules because of the 24 teams that went to the bubbles last year. I really do.
Well, you are ever the optimist when it comes to the National Hockey
League. Glasses always half full, Bob.
And hockey. Well, then don't drink anymore. Guys, we're going to let you go. We're not going to solve this situation, the four of us. And even if we did, no one would listen to us. So it's not a wasted exercise. It's an interesting one. But we will have to wait and see what the National Hockey League decides to do. And then we'll keep our fingers crossed that all the optimists are right and this thing works out in the best possible way. And eventually there are fans in the stands. And at some point, hopefully before we all die, we'll see regular hockey at a regular time of the year with the usual crowd filling the building. And but that is somewhere down the road. Burnside, be safe, be careful. And looks like a sunny day there in Atlanta, so maybe you get out and enjoy it. Lawton, you got snow in Minnesota?
No snow
yet.
Not
yet,
one.
Pal. Yet.
No. Right.
Stay safe as well. Good to see you as always, and hopefully,
thank you, Bob.
Hopefully, we'll all get a chance to chat again real soon. Thank you all, Christmas boys. And Merry Christmas if we don't talk. John, all the best on the weekend to you. We'll see you back on here on Monday. To those of you watching and or listening, thanks a lot, and we'll see you after the weekend. Bye bye.